Caskey hits this one deep to left field. This has a chance. This ball is gone. It's a walk-off home run.
Now Caleb driving left side. Alley-oop to Nelson. Throws it down with two hands.
Later fake the handoff. Keeps it running left. He's across midfield. 40, 30, 20, 10. Jalen Reiner to the house.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast. The A-State Podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, baseball opening up conference play over the weekend. We'll talk all about the series with the Raging Cajuns. Also, football spring practice now underway. And a nice weekend for the tennis team. We'll start talking about everything they're doing as well. But right now, want to begin with men's basketball, and for the first time since 1999, the program playing in a postseason tournament. Sunday night, they accepted an invitation to play in the Roe College Basketball Invitational. It will be played in Daytona Beach, and the tournament is beginning this Saturday at noon as the Red Wolves take on Bethune-Cookman, and here to talk about it is the creator and the president of the CBI, Rick Giles. How you doing, Rick?
Doing great. I'm glad to be with you guys today.
First off, you know, before we started recording, you said just what a long weekend it was deciding which teams would be in this tournament field. So tell us, how does this field of 15 teams ultimately get selected?
So it's a long process, as you can imagine, but it culminates with a very long selection weekend. So we send out indications of interest sort of back in February, and we get a bunch of responses to that. And then over the course of the 30 days preceding selection weekend, we're constantly talking to teams, gauging their interest in playing in the CBI. And as you can imagine, over those 30 days, sometimes teams are going up and sometimes teams are going down. They experience injuries. And then as we come into the sort of championship week, which is actually probably more like 10 or 12 days, teams are playing their way into the NCAA tournament or the NIT. And so we're constantly juggling this group of maybe 30 or 40 teams that we start with down to Sunday night when we finalize the field. So it's a process of working with the teams and understanding what their situation is, and that varies from team to team. Kids are injured. Now the advent of the transfer portal has added another variable as that transfer portal starts the Monday after Selection Sunday. Mm-hmm. So it's a process of constant dialogue.
As it pertains to the NIT, a couple of things. You know, the NCAA is sort of changing the rules. Some at places like Arkansas State might even call it moving the goalposts in terms of who they take. And then coupled with, you know, some of the teams, they moved the goalposts for then not accepting those bids. Kind of how much did the NIT change things for you, especially at the 11th hour, wondering how their field shapes out?
Yeah, so for so many years, the process was a little bit more formulaic. Conference champion lost in their conference tournament, and they were immediately slotted into the NIT. And, you know, we could sort of figure out what impact that had on the remaining teams that might be available to us in the pool. This year, the first year of these NIT changes, it was a lot more difficult because a lot of teams had no idea where they fit in or were very bitterly disappointed if they lost in the conference tournament that they weren't getting that NIT bid. So it definitely created confusion. And I think as we saw yesterday play out, I think there were between 7 and 9 teams that declined invitations to the NIT, which further complicated the process, both for them and for us, because there's obviously a domino effect as all of those kinds of decisions are being made.
You talk about how you're constantly monitoring what's going on and these teams that are potential participants in this field. But in the case of Arkansas State, this is a team that really got hot late in the season. They won 10 of their final 13 games this year. So when you look at what they did and factoring in what they did down the stretch, how appealing was an Arkansas State being part of this tournament this year?
So the answer in a very short term is very appealing. And they're the perfect profile for us. So we want teams that are trending up, teams that are playing well, that want to continue playing well. And our tournament, everybody sort of uses it in a different way. Sometimes it's used as, you know, further development, just like the bowl season, like, hey, let's get more practice and let's get more games for guys that are coming back. Other times it's a reward. Hey, we've had a really good season, and unfortunately, with the way things are, we're not able to access the NCAA tournament or the NIT, but we feel like our kids deserve a postseason experience. And so the team that we don't want is the team that's down to six or seven scholarship players, and they've struggled down the stretch, and you know, the coach is tired of the players, and the players are tired of the coach, and they don't really interested in continuing their season. But Arkansas State is the opposite of that. They've been playing so well down the stretch. It really is a chance for them to continue this and to get a taste of the postseason. It's funny, we didn't even dig this out, but on our Twitter feed, we found this, that Keith Dambrot from Duquesne, who had a great run in the Atlantic 10 tournament. So after they won the championship and earned the automatic bid to the NCAA tournament, this video surfaced of him being interviewed in Daytona Beach last year. And if there was ever a commercial for the CBI, it was what Keith said. The value of giving a postseason experience to the players, the value of that in terms of recruiting, and how that's like sort of a growing experience. And that's really what we've noticed. Teams that have played in the CBI over the years, and you know, we've been around for a while now, it really has been a springboard to future success. And that's what we hope for everybody. There's only going to be one champion down at Daytona Beach, but you don't have to win it for it to be a valuable experience.
I think you're exactly right on all accounts. A-State does sort of check every box of a team that has embraced the CBI and used it as a springboard to big things down the line. You talked about the complications of kind of setting your field. Well, then that's just one thing. You got to get it set, and then you have to seed it. So can I talk through a timeline of how Sunday goes from getting your teams and then kind of getting this bracket set?
Yeah, so we've got this pool of teams, and there are always a few teams on Sunday that are sort of floating in and out, might qualify for the NIT or still playing for a conference championship, although that wasn't the case with us yesterday, but in past years it has been. And so we try to, the first thing we look at is the highly controversial net. And so we sort of sort teams out with the net. Uh-huh. And then we want to avoid conference matchups or other rivalry games that might already be in place to not have those rematches take place unless it's deep in the tournament in Daytona. So, you know, it's a process of sort of slotting, putting together the bracket and then tweaking it as we move through the day on Sunday until we sort of, one, get the teams finalized, and then two, are comfortable that teams are seated appropriately and we're avoiding some of those matchups that I just described.
Rick, I'm fascinated with just how this tournament came to be, because for so long it was the NCAA and the NIT. They were the two postseason tournaments. But you started the CBI back in 2008. How did it come about?
So really interesting, because it sort of goes to that, you know, what comes around type of phrase. The NCAA bought the NIT. And one of the first things that they did when they bought the NIT was reduce the field. It used to be 40 teams. They reduced it to 32. Mm-hmm. So right off the bat, there were eight teams that, in the population that were used to playing in the postseason that weren't going to be able to. And then on the heels of that, they added the automatic qualifiers for conference champions, regular season champions who don't win their conference tournament. So they automatically got seeded. And on average, up until this year, that was somewhere between 10, 11, 12 teams per year. So that was, you took 20 teams out of the mix, out of the postseason mix when that decision was made prior to us starting the CBI. So there was a lot of bitterness. And we called around and said, hey, you know, based upon these changes that the NCAA has made, would you be interested in playing in another postseason tournament? And the answer was overwhelmingly yes, you know, for a lot of the reasons that we previously described. And so over the years, you know, we started out as a 16-team tournament and with pods and home games and things like that. And we've tweaked it over the years and adapted to, you know, different changes in the scheduling environment. And what we actually found down in Daytona Beach was a gem, because during COVID in 2020, obviously we had to cancel the CBI in March, just like everything else got canceled. And then, you know, we were still feeling the effects of COVID as much as we want to forget about it at the end of the 2021 season. So we weren't going to do it. You know, we had been in our regular season tournaments had all been in bubbles and, you know, people were just worn down at the end. But we got some interest. People started saying to us, like, why aren't you guys doing the CBI? And so we talked about COVID and, you know, trying to do it at home sites. And it occurred to us that we had this venue down in Daytona that we were at that time just planning to go to. We actually hadn't been there yet. And so we decided to create this bubble, and the hotel, the Hilton, the Arkansas State team will enjoy it because the Hilton is right on the beach. You walk out the back door and you're on the beach. You walk out the front door and go across the street, you're in the arena. And it was a perfect location. So we bubbled up that year, and you know, we were testing every day and we didn't have any fans, all that stuff that we went through. But, and we only had eight teams. We probably could have had more, but we kept it to eight. The feedback we got from the teams, they loved it down there. They said, this is great. Like, it's a spring break. You know, a lot of our players miss spring break because we're playing in conference tournaments. And this is a chance for them to come down and get a break and get a new experience, competitive experience, play against people that they're not normally playing against. Because we, as you can see from our bracket, get teams from all four corners of the country and everything in between. And the feedback we got was so great that we said, let's just keep doing it. So the next year we said, let's do it at Daytona, and same thing, great feedback. And so that's where we've established ourselves as the home of the CBI. And it really takes a lot of the variables and unknowns out of it for teams. They don't have to worry about where they're traveling. And it was always like traveling on short notice. And they also don't have to worry about hosting. You know, like at the beginning of this broadcast, you guys were talking about all the spring sports that are starting and spring football. And so, you know, that can be a drain on an athletic department to all of a sudden get this game. Okay, you're going to host this college basketball game, you know, on 2 days' notice. So the Daytona Beach venue has been terrific for us.
It's interesting because people have preconceived notions or adding tournaments beyond the NCAA and NIT, and there are elitists probably who want to look down their nose at that. But I would say, I mean, if I'm running the numbers here with the NCAA, with the NIT, with you guys, the CBI, and even, you know, the CIT for that matter, it's still altogether roughly about one third of the NCAA Division I men's basketball teams that get a chance to play in the postseason. That's a pretty small number.
Yeah. No, it's way less than, for instance, the bowls. And the kids deserve it. You know, kids that have had good seasons, you know, that I think the general public, you know, doesn't realize how hard it is to make the NCAA tournament. I mean, it's really, really hard. And so, you know, as the NIT moves toward more power conference teams, this is a great outlet and a great option for teams.
For those people who are thinking about coming to the Ocean Center to watch the games coming up this week, what can they look forward to? And I'm interested, how has the city of Daytona embraced the tournament and the things that are surrounding the CBI?
Yeah, they've been terrific. The venue, the Ocean Center, is a great venue for this event. You guys will see that. And the Hilton, where we stay right across the street, as I said, on the beach, terrific place for people to be. There's lots to do. Yeah, it's really fun to be walking on the beach, and there is a little bit of spring break stuff going on. But, you know, I go for morning walks, and you can go out like that time or during the day, and, you know, you see 15, 6'3 to 6'10 guys walking down the beach with CBI bucket hats on. And, you know, there's a little bit of a buzz on that. It's, you know, it's really a good environment. You know, all the teams are at the hotel, and, you know, all 16 teams, obviously, at the beginning. And, you know, there's a good buzz in the hotel as well. So it's really been a great place for us to have it. And the folks at Daytona have been terrific.
Hey, last thing from my standpoint, you know, you do get, I'd say, the added benefit of, you know, your last three games, your two semis and the finals have a national TV spot on ESPN2. Just kind of how big is that for the tournament?
It's great for us because obviously it translates into, you know, sponsorship and things that we do commercially for the event. But I'll tell you, like a couple of years ago, I was on the scores table, and it's when UNC Wilmington won the event. And I was sitting with Jimmy Bass, who was the athletic director at that time at Wilmington. And he turned to me and said, "Rick, you don't understand. We are not on ESPN2 the entire season. Like, we haven't been on ESPN2 the entire season. I think maybe they had one ESPNU." So the only way we get on ESPN2 is if we get to the conference championship game. And here we're on back-to-back nights. That's more than anybody else has been on national TV, ESPN2, in prime time from our conference for the entire season. So it's great exposure. And remember, by the time we get to our semifinals and finals next week, so we'll have on our semifinals, we have four teams left. There are only 16 NCAA tournament teams. I think there are only eight NIT teams left. So you're talking about there are only 20-something college teams playing basketball at the time when college basketball is at its highest level of interest. So it's a chance for obviously us to put our tournament on a great platform, but it is also a chance for these teams to advance and put their team, their athletic department, their university on a national platform. When Jimmy Bass said that to me a few years ago, really struck me as to what the importance is of being on TV those two nights to the teams that make it that far.
And final thing for me here, Rick, I know last year the CBI was kind of on the cutting edge with NIL. NIL money was divided among the teams that went the furthest in the tournament. Is that the case again this year?
So you're going to have to call me back and we can spend a whole nother podcast talking about my frustrations with the NCAA and their approach to NIL. The NCAA basically told us after the fact last year that we were not permitted to have this NIL pool for the teams. And therefore, we were not able to do it again this year. I think that was a terrible decision, interpretation of their rules. We ended up last year, because of that directive, we ended up having to pay, we did still pay that money, but we paid it directly to the teams. And I really wanted that to go directly to the players and still feel like it should. So when you guys have time to do another NIL podcast, I'd be happy to come on and talk about my strong feelings about how the players deserve to have NIL opportunities like what we wanted to provide.
I think that'd be a fascinating conversation as well. But Rick, we know you're busy, and we just really appreciate you taking time to visit with us, and couldn't be more thrilled about Arkansas State coming down to Daytona Beach this week to participate in the Roe College Basketball Invitational, and look forward to seeing you there.
Well, that's great. Really appreciate you having me, and I also just want to make sure that we tell all the Arkansas State fans that they can come down to Daytona Beach and enjoy the beach and good basketball, and they can get tickets at the Ocean Center or on Ticketmaster. And we look forward to seeing you guys this weekend.
That's Rick Giles joining us here on the Second to None podcast. More to come right after this.
Get huge savings now at every Kavanaugh dealership. Kavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Kavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to KavanaughCars.com.
This is Coach Brian Hodson, and I'm asking you to help our A-State student-athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This organization helps our program stay competitive and supports our student-athletes by facilitating NIL agreements that allow them to endorse local charities. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact spelled I-M-P-A-C-K-T Club.com. Your support makes a real difference in the lives of our student-athletes. Wolves up.
Back on the Second to None podcast presented by the Kavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. Baseball team opening up conference play this past weekend. The Ragin' Cajuns were at the top. The series really started off nice on Friday night, able to take the opener by the score of 11-8. Exciting game. A-State led 6-3 after six innings, but the Cajuns come back. They score three times in the top of the seventh to tie it up. But love the way our guys responded after that. Alan Greer had a great at bat. He ended up drawing a bases loaded walk to give A-State the lead at 7-6. And then right after that, the power hitter, Will French, hits it out to right field, a grand slam, his second home run of the night, and he ends up with seven RBIs in the game. And what's unique about that is it was the second time in a week a Red Wolf had two homers and seven runs batted in the same game.
Yep.
Dylan DeBeauty had done it in a game against Eastern Illinois the weekend before.
Yeah, second straight series opener with a two home run, seven RBI grand slam game, and it came out of your leadoff and your eight hole.
Yeah, I can't imagine too many times that's ever happened in college baseball, but we've seen a power surge from Will of late, and I had a fun visit with him after that Friday game, but I asked him to explain the recent display of power that he had shown. And, you know, all four of his home runs this year have come within the last week and a half. Before that, he had hit a total of two home runs in his career. He had no homers as a freshman. He had two last year as a sophomore and now four this season. But he said, hey, I'm just getting some good pitches that I can barrel up. But Will is capable of doing that.
He just almost led off the bottom of the first with one on Sunday. Sort of went down and got one. I just sort of golfed it up in the air, and it kept carrying and carrying and got out of the reach of the left fielder for a leadoff double. Didn't like a lot leaving the yard. So, yeah, he's shown that he's got sneaky pop when needed. I'm a big Will French fan.
Yeah.
Well. But just the way he plays the game and his approach at the plate and just how he could sort of flip a switch between kind of the at-bats he has if he's leading off an inning versus the kind of at-bat he has if he's got runners on. I just think he's a real heady player, and I enjoy getting to watch him play.
You know, since he stepped foot on campus at A-State, he started every single game as a Red Wolf.
Yeah, he's
121 games and 121 starts.
He's the only person around going to have a chance to play more games than Caleb Fields.
We'll talk about that coming up here in just a minute, but yeah, you go back to that Friday game. It's 11-6, but you knew the Cajuns weren't going to quit. They scored twice in the top of the eighth, and then they loaded the bases in the ninth. And one of my favorite moments about that game was Tommy Raffo came out with two outs in the ninth and the bases loaded. Cajuns had the go-ahead run at the plate. He told the story in the postgame. He's walking to the mound, and before he even got there, he told Max Charlton, "I'm riding with you." And he said the best part about it was I didn't have to say anything else. Everybody else in that meeting on the mound just started talking. Yeah, Max, we believe in you, man. You've got the stuff. You're going to get us out of this. And Coach Raffo said he kind of got chills after that. He said, I just turned around and went back to the dugout. And then he got a pop out to end the game, and the Red Wolves won 11-8.
We say it all the time, regardless of the sport, right? The best teams are player-led.
Yeah, that was a good example of that. Had a chance to take the series on Saturday, and man, it was looking good. The Red Wolves were up 6-2 after seven innings, just kind of cruising. And then the Cajuns score four in the eighth, one in the ninth. They come back and win that one 7-6.
This was a really odd to me and disjointed game. And the fact that through the first, you say the first third of the game, Cajuns could have and should have been up a lot more than 2-0. They didn't cash in.
They stranded 11 runners in the first five innings, including the bases loaded twice.
In the middle innings, when we surged ahead, we were up 6-2, but honestly probably left some stuff on the table there, right? Had a chance to be up by more. So they didn't totally cash in early. We didn't totally cash in the middle. And then they did finally cash in enough late to come back and get it.
So the series is tied at a game apiece going into Sunday. And look, it was another tight game. It was tied at 5 late, but the Cajuns able to score 3 runs to win it, 8-5, and they end up taking 2 out of 3 in the series. You want to win a series to open up conference play, especially at home against a team that caliber. But you go back the last 2 years, the Red Wolves were swept against that team, including getting down in a hole last year when they opened up conference play in Lafayette. So I think there were still some really encouraging things to take out of the weekend. And, you know, hopefully they can go into Marshall this weekend and find a way to win a series there.
There were encouraging things. I don't think there's any doubt by anybody who's watched. And now I think the people in Lafayette have seen it too. And the people around the league are looking at it. That offensively, this is a much improved team. Up and down the lineup, there's more punch. This is a more potent offense. You know, I think the starting rotation, as it stands right now, can be pretty solid. But I know Coach Raffo and Coach Trawick are, you know, still trying to figure out now is that when we got to go to that bullpen, who can we hand it to and trust we're going to get outs? Like, right, I mean, I heard Coach Raffo say about the Saturday game, I mean, it's a miracle you're in a one-run game when you walk 12 guys.
And that really hadn't been the big issue this year, as opposed to maybe the last couple of years.
Yeah. Some of those things kind of reared their head a little bit. Hopefully it was one off because, this is a team that's much improved. And I know they're anxious for people to see that and know that to be the case. So they continue in Sun Belt play.
Yeah, that was a Cajun team that was leading the league in ERA going into the weekend. And the Red Wolves scored 11, 6, and 5 against them. So that kind of tells you that this is a good A-State offense, and that's going to be a big key for them going forward. And they've got a lot of baseball coming up this week. They'll play Southern Illinois twice at home at 6 o'clock on Tuesday night, then on the road Wednesday at 6 in Carbondale. And they'll go from Carbondale to Huntington, West Virginia, and play their first conference road series of the season with games Friday at 5, Saturday at 2, and then Sunday at noon.
Brand new ballpark. First conference series for Marshall in their new ballpark.
And with me going to Daytona Beach, I was talking with Steve Cotton, their play-by-play guy, and I'm going to send Cade Carlton over there to call that series this upcoming weekend. He said, hey, Cade's going to be the very first one to use the visiting radio booth. So I told Cade already, you're making history this weekend going in there and calling that series.
I'm sure it'll be the answer to a trivia question I'll ask years from now over there.
That will be one that comes up many times. We'll take another time out. Be back to wrap things up right after this.
At First National Bank, our mortgage lending team knows what it takes to make a home and a superior home loan process. Simple, proven, and reliable service with competitive rates at a bank that already feels like home. Since 1889, that's been the First National Bank way, because for our people, this is home. Apply online at fnbank.net/mortgage. From our family to yours, welcome home. First National Bank. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Red Wolf fans, this is Demario Davis, proud Red Wolf and linebacker for the New Orleans Saints. And I'm asking you to help out our current A-State student athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This organization helps our program stay competitive and supports our players by facilitating NIL agreements that allow them to endorse local charities. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access you won't find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. Thank you, and Wolves up.
Back one more time here on the Second to None podcast, presented by First National Bank and by the Cavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com. Football team starting spring practice this past week. They were on the field Wednesday and Thursday. Now, they're off this week for spring break, but they'll return to practice coming up next Monday, the 25th.
I think the thing I like about this week the best is that I've even seen and heard and seen some social media stuff where coaches are out on vacation. And that honestly makes my heart happy, because
they
these guys
need it.
Don't take that opportunity very much. And so it's good to see them get a chance to get out and unplug and see them out different places with their kids, because, you know, it's sort of full speed when they get back in here next week.
The number two in the nation A-State bowling team was in action at the Music City Classic this past weekend in Smyrna, Tennessee. They finished fourth in that event, and now they get ready to begin postseason play. That's this weekend in the inaugural Conference USA Championship. That will be Friday through Sunday in Louisiana.
Listen, I think they're right on pace. You know, up to number two in the polls. You know, good solid finish this week after coming off a couple tournament titles. Right where they want to be. I think pretty much considered a lock. You would hope it to be in the NCAA tournament and continue that march toward the one thing that hasn't happened yet.
That national championship.
I mean, look, they've done
only thing they haven't done
thing possible. Besides that, including three national runner-ups now. So just right on pace.
Golf teams, the men are, as we record this, competing at the All-American Collegiate that's hosted by Houston. And the women, they finished 15th at the Mountain View Collegiate in Tucson this past weekend. That was a really, really tough field they played against. Some of the better teams in the country were in that tournament. The women will play at the Fresno State Classic coming up next Monday and Tuesday. What a weekend for the tennis team. Won their first Sun Belt Conference road match since 2021 Saturday at ULM. In fact, they swept the Warhawks 4-0. And then later in the day, they beat Jackson State 4-2. Coach Sujay Lama's team now 7-6 overall, and they're 1-1 in conference play. They'll play their next four matches at home starting Saturday at 10 a.m. against Marshall, and then they'll play Sunday at 10 a.m. against Appalachian State, and these will be the first matches of the season played at the A-State tennis courts.
Yeah, and their win total right now, and they're only, like, this was only the second weekend of Sun Belt play, so quite a bit of season left to go, and they've already won more matches in any season since 2012. They do have that four-match homestand coming up. We can talk about next weekend, the 30th. There's a lot going on at their tennis match, something they're calling their Family Fun Fest, and we can talk about that next week. But there's also some cool stuff this week that they're going to do. Understand it's spring break, but there are on campus, you know, there are a lot of the international students obviously don't have the luxury of just running home for spring break. Quite a number of international students still here, so they're having an event at Saturday's match for the international students. Going to have games and music and stuff for those guys and some cultural performances from some of the different nations represented. They're going to do a clinic after the matches. So that'll be fun to see this Saturday.
And before we wrap things up, I want to remind you the men's basketball team playing in the Roe College Basketball Invitational that's at the Ocean Center in Daytona Beach. Saturday at noon, they'll take on Bethune-Cookman. Their campus is 2 miles away from where we're playing. But if the Red Wolves win, they'll move on to Monday's quarterfinals against the winner of Montana and Presbyterian. Really, really excited to just see this team one more time. So many of these guys coming back next year. And hopefully we can have a pretty long stay at Daytona Beach.
Chance for Caleb to make some more history, right?
Yeah, this will be game number 150 for Caleb Fields coming up on Saturday, which is the most all-time for an A-State player. It breaks the tie with his former teammate, Marquise Eaton, who played 149 games as a Red Wolf. So Caleb playing game number 150 Saturday and hopefully 151, 152, and 153 after that.
Let's enjoy it. And I know we did, and he had like the perfect send-off. I mean, his senior day was one for the ages. To have the stage to himself and to get a win and the crowd chanting his name and all that, you just couldn't drop a better senior day. But we should enjoy not just the fact that this men's team gets to play, but here's a chance to enjoy Caleb Fields for as long as this thing goes, because he is part of a dying breed.
Yeah. Etched his name in the record books for a very long time to come.
And listen, and golly, I'm going to walk the line here. Career records, by and large, for the foreseeable future, until we have some other seismic shift in kind of the landscape of college athletics, career records are going to be real safe. And Caleb has set some of those and put himself in a situation where he can come back to Arkansas State forever as a husband, as a dad down the line. He's always going to be celebrated when he comes back here. And like I said, that's in this day and age, like, kids getting to have a legacy is fleeting. And so it really is worth celebrating. I'm sure I am glad that dude goes to my school.
Couldn't have said it better. It's just special to watch him play. Looking forward to seeing a few more games from Caleb, hopefully. In the meantime, I do want to thank Rick Giles, the creator and president of the CBI, for joining us earlier. Enjoyed that visit. For Brad, I'm Matt. Have a great week, everybody.